Take the last train to Clarksville and I'll meet you at the station. You did a sex offense and you got chemical castration.
Hello, beautiful humans. I'm Tymie Castle.
And I'm Benjamin Mead.
And you're listening to Just a Minute. Just a Minute is an educational podcast where we break down justice topics in 30 minutes or less. Today's topic, chemical castration. Hello, and thanks for joining us. Hello, Ben.
Hi, Tymie. Hi there. PSA Hello. Message, everybody, as Bob Barker would say, help control the pet population. Get your pet spayed or neutered today.
Yes, it's the Beat the Heat Challenge for Cat's Cradle, especially. It's called Beat the Heat Challenge.
Oh, I like that. So I know you know this story.
Yes.
And I don't think I've told it on our podcast before, but my grandfather... Yeah. Was an unlicensed vet.
I actually think there was an episode where you mentioned this.
Maybe I did,
but I just don't remember what context.
I don't think I told this story.
No,
but I do remember mentioning this before. But anyway, back in the early 1900s, in rural Appalachian Wise County, there were no vets, and
yes.
So he was a smart man, and he just ordered the books and taught himself vet medicine. And
which
kind of
is
did
pretty
that.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he did that as a side hustle. And it wasn't just like, okay, I'm going to like stitch up a wound. He spayed and neutered cats and
yes.
he inseminated livestock. And
yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. But anyway, like a year before he died, he had a massive stroke and he never really recovered after that. He was bedridden
yeah.
and never really spoke again. So he was in the hospital that night. And this might have been like the last words that he spoke.
Oh my gosh.
But he was having flashbacks. Like they had this old building behind the house and where they would do like the surgeries and stuff.
Yeah.
And he must have been having flashbacks or something because the nurse walked in and he said, honey, hop up on this table here. Let me spay you. So anyway, I bring that up because we're going to talk about chemical castrations for sex offenders. And spaying and neutering a pet is not the same thing as
not the same
chemical
thing.
Castration.
No.
And physical castration would be the same thing as neutering.
Right.
But that's not what we're going to talk about that a little bit.
Yes.
But physical and chemical castration aren't the same thing either.
Okay.
Chemical castration actually isn't a very precise scientific term.
Right.
But anyway, we're getting a little bit ahead of myself. So anyway,
okay.
Chemical castration is more precisely referred to as HLT, hormone lowering therapy, or hormone lowering treatment.
Right, right.
Or it's also called androgen suppressive therapy. Basically,
yes.
It's a treatment or a drug that works to lower the production of androgen or male hormones.
Right, right.
Primarily testosterone. Testosterone is the male hormone that is reduced in these treatments.
Right.
So I'm going to say HLT
okay.
for brief instead of hormone lowering therapy or chemical castration.
Yeah.
Because
yes.
again, that's not very precise. Precise term.
Right.
But anyway, HLT is basically the name for the therapy of the process to chemically
right.
castrate someone.
Got it.
And one of the, this is just a side note, but one of the statistical programs that I use in my research is HLM, Hierarchical Linear Modeling.
Right, right.
So when I was typing this out, I typed out the whole script and put HLM in it instead of HLT.
Oh,
so
okay.
I had to do like a whole
yeah.
find and replace all those. But anyway,
yeah.
HLT, hormone lowering treatment.
I actually don't think I knew it was called that, HLT. Mm-hmm. I knew it as like androgen mm-hmm. suppressive therapy, but I knew mm-hmm. no one referred to it as that, but I don't think I knew it as HLT.
Well, I couldn't, when I was searching for like Google Scholar,
yeah.
I couldn't find a lot of stuff on chemical castration. And then I started using other terms and this was like,
that's it. Yeah.
A lot of, the other sources were talking about this, but anyway, HLT, it's not just for sex offenders. It's actually
yes.
primarily used for male hormone related cancers, especially prostate cancers.
Yeah. That makes sense to me.
So primarily yeah. it's a medical,
right.
you know, procedure for
right.
Cancer patients, and it's a monthly, more or less, it you know, depending upon your
yes
I guess biological, but anyway, on average a monthly injection that is a temporary treatment or
right.
a temporary suppressive of the production of testosterone.
Yes.
It's not permanent and the effects only last as long as you're getting the shot.
Right.
An MPA or medroxyprogesterone acetate.
Good.
Yeah, thank you.
MPA.
yeah, also known as MPA or Depo-Provera. I think it's also used as a birth control drug.
It is. I'm not sure how popular it still is, but it was definitely popular in like the 1990s and the early 2000s, for sure. I mean, there are other methods now that are preferable because it had a lot of side effects for women.
Yeah, I did read there were some problems, But anyway, MPA or Depo-Provera is the primary drug that's used in the U.S. to reduce testosterone, essentially to prepubescent levels, so reduces your levels to pre-puberty. And the primary effect of that is to reduce your sexual desire. But it may also cause some physical symptoms as well, like erectile dysfunction or perhaps shrinking of the penis or testicles.
Okie dokie.
It also reduces sperm production. It doesn't sterilize or totally eliminate sexual functioning. But it does significantly reduce them. So major buzzkill. And I did censor that a little bit because you know what else? A major bee killer. But anyway, so other side effects of HLT include other physical changes. Reducing testosterone creates hair loss. May lead to some breast growth and particularly increases weight gain. And there are also some significant health side effects, particularly resulting from the weight gain. But other things, but also HLT can lead to bone and muscle loss. Significant number of long-term users have osteoporosis, and like I said, weight gain can be particularly related in these individuals to cholesterol, blood pressure problems, and ultimately diabetes.
So, I mean, it's not funny, It's just like those physical and health consequences and changes you just talked about are what women going through menopause experience. So chemical castration or HLT is basically making these folks menopausal because they're experiencing osteoporosis, bone and muscle loss, weight gain, all things associated with that.
Certainly, we're going to talk about this in a moment, cruel and unusual.
Okay.
Harshly punitive.
So we use HLT to punish sex offenders specifically. Why and how often?
It's not totally clear exactly how and how often we use this. We don't know.
Which is a problem.
We don't know a lot about the effects of HLT for punishment of sex offenses. And we especially don't know how, really how much it's used in the U.S. It's one of those things that you would think that we should know a lot more about. Than we actually do. But there is a ton of research on HLT, but primarily it's focused on its medical uses and effects. And we haven't studied it very much when it comes to things like rearrest or recidivism. And listeners, I'm sticking to my guns here.
I did not ask you.
I'm not going to define it. You got to go back and listen if you want to know what recidivism is.
Previous episodes.
But if you're a dedicated listener, you should already know what that is by
our
heart.
Listeners, our dedicated listeners know. The new listeners, catch up.
Go back and listen to our back catalog. But anyway, we don't know much about how states use it in practice. We don't know much about its effect on recidivism rates, but we obviously know about like the laws on the books. So historically, time machine, Zach. Prior to the 1900s, physical castration was used quite frequently as a punishment for crime. And physical castration, we haven't really explained what that is, but that surgical removal of the testicles.
Was it in like a medical procedure, or did they just like lop it right off?
They used it for
like lop it off.
I don't know if they used anesthetic or not, but it was used as, you know, punishment for crime. And before that, it was frequently used on enslaved persons as kind of a punishment, and you know, also some kind of eugenic type of things. But in terms of criminal punishment, it fell out of use, and particularly, you know, after 1900, courts started overruling those sentences on appeal. And Europe has used HLT, chemical castration, since the early 1900s, but California was the first state in the U.S. to pass a chemical castration bill, and that happened in 1996.
I did not know that. I would not have suspected California was the initiator there.
Other states have bills, and those include you know, Texas, Florida, Iowa, and Louisiana. There's a, you know, few more handful of them, but it's not actually widespread. And actually, a number of states have had laws on the books and have repealed them.
Okay.
And a number of states have proposed laws that have never passed.
Okay.
So when I was, putting this stuff together, there were a ton of articles about a proposed bill in New Mexico that was proposed early in 2023.
Oh.
And so there are all these news articles about it, and I was like, okay.
Did it go anywhere?
No, it actually didn't.
Okay.
So when I looked, I had to go, actually had to go to like New Mexico legislation, and basically I pulled up this bill and it was like tabled indefinitely. So there was a lot of news and hype about it, but it never came to pass. And Georgia and Oregon particularly were two states that had these laws in the past and have repealed them and no longer use that.
Did any of these articles say why the states repealed the laws? No.
There was not a lot of information about it, but it was just kind of like, undetermined, undefined political reasons for removing that.
Okay.
But, for the laws that do exist, most of them require the crime to be a sex offense that involves a child.
Okay.
A small handful of these states allow it for any sex offense, but particularly a repeat sex offense. So California, since it was the first law, in a lot of the other states modeled it on their law, the way that it works is that your first sex offense against a minor under the age of 13, chemical castration is discretionary. So it's an option the judge can impose, but it's up to the judge to decide whether it fits or not.
Okay.
The second offense against a child under age 13, it's mandatory.
You have
to have it.
Wow.
And parolees are required to begin treatment 1 week before they're released from prison. So start getting the injections before they're released.
Yes.
And they're usually required to continue treatment until the court essentially determines that it's no longer necessary.
Okay.
And that may be based on either like a Department of Corrections evaluation or a medical evaluation.
And they get revoked if they don't continue treatment?
Potentially. So it can either be considered like a parole violation, or you can get charged for a new crime for failing to comply with that.
Okay.
A felony in some states in some cases. But these states don't release reports on its use and effects, so which is why I said we don't really know how often it's used, how many people are on this treatment. We don't have a solid idea of exactly how many eligible cases it's applied to. So it could be kind of a rare thing, but we don't really know. And finally, an interesting fact about some of these bills is that they allow for an option of physical castration. So if you're charged with an offense and, chemical castration is on the table, you can actually choose between physical or chemical castration. So in that case, the ball's in your court. And I didn't come up with that joke.
Okay.
I have to admit, I didn't come up with that.
Okay.
It was actually
the scholar?
Yeah, it was actually the title of a law review article. The Balls in Your Court, Chemical Castration Statutes or something along those lines.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I didn't mention this during the paraphilias episode, but there are some behaviors that are paraphilic involving kind of torture to the penis and testicles that are sort of similar to castration.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just wanted to mention that just because it's also a paraphilic disorder. So there are some people who actually get some kind of enjoyment from this as well. Mm. Yeah.
Yikes.
Anyway, like you said at the beginning, we're talking about the surgical removal of the testicles.
Right, for physical castration.
Yes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Not the penis.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
No, that remains intact.
Okay.
Either realm.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. So what do we know about the effectiveness of HLT when it comes to sex offenders and sex offenses?
It's hard to say. Sorry, I can't stop myself with these puns.
I mean, if people have listened to us so far, they should know what they're getting into by listening to the episode. They know there are going to be a ton of jokes that you're going to throw them out there. Anyway, tell us.
So some research shows that it reduces sexual desires and fantasies.
Yes.
And lowers how much people think about sex.
Yeah.
And HLT, chemical castration, is an approach to punishment that we would call incapacitation.
Right.
Which, we have retribution and deterrence and incapacitation and rehabilitation. And incapacitation particularly is about taking away the ability of people to commit crime.
Right.
So locking somebody up in prison behind stone walls and steel bars takes away their ability to commit crime in the community.
Yes.
We can also think about like electronic monitoring as a way to stop people from committing crime, take away the capacity. So when we think about the application of castration, it's about incapacitating sex offenders, taking away their ability to sex offend. And as I said, you know, there may be some physical constraints or limitations, but the primary effect of HLT is to reduce sex drive. It does not, I mean, it definitely dampens things, but it does not completely take away the ability of people to have sex. But the primary effect is like reducing reducing your sex drive. A number of studies have found that the reoccurrence of a sex offense is quite low among those on HLT treatment.
Okay.
But those have been, you know, studies without a control group. And we know that's not really good methodologically scientific.
So, because they may have been less likely to offend again anyway.
Right. So there haven't been any strong evaluations of the effectiveness of chemical castration on recidivism. And going back to that point, sexual recidivism is a pretty complicated picture.
Yes.
So, I mean, sex offenders tend to recidivate less than other types of offenders.
Mm-hmm.
And when sex offenders do recidivate, they're more likely to commit a non-sex offense than to commit a sex offense again.
Yeah, it's very complicated.
But still, sex offenders are much more likely to repeat a sex offense than non-sex offenders.
Yes.
So it may be hard to wrap your brain around that, and I usually kind of like draw a chart about that. But sex offender recidivism is low. They're certainly much more likely to sexually recidivate than non-sex offenders, but otherwise lower recidivism rates.
Right.
And even when they do recidivate, they're more likely to commit a non-sex offense. So sex offender recidivism is a complicated picture to begin with.
Definitely.
In studies that do exist, have been done on small samples.
Right.
The research is outdated.
Yes.
Not sophisticated methodologically. I did read a few studies that were done in Germany a few years ago, because apparently HLT is done more widespreadly in Europe and in Asia than in the U.S. But those studies out of Germany looked at the impact of HLT on recidivism risk assessment score. So just like an instrument, they didn't actually measure its effect on arrest and recidivism. So
got it.
Again,
okay,
there's mixed evidence. Okay. We're not really sure. Some studies show that HLT is related to reduced recidivism rates, and some don't find a lot of difference or a lot of effects.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, that's a good segue into some of the criticisms or problems of HLT. Mm-hmm. So maybe hypothetically or empirically, it may be effective with paraphilic disorders.
Right.
See our episode on paraphilias.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a good one.
But a paraphilic sex offender is one who is motivated by sexual fantasies or fetishes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the crime is about sexual gratification, and this is tied to and related to their fantasies, like pedophilia. But also remember that a lot of people who sexually abuse children are not pedophiles. They're not acting out a paraphilia, as we mentioned in that
episode. Yeah, we talked about that because that kind of puzzled me at first.
Yes. So if you have sex offenders who deny their responsibility or claim it was situational or a one-time thing due to like stress or intoxication, or especially if the sex offense was motivated by anger, power, or violence, then just simply reducing testosterone is not going to work.
Right. So the criticism is that HRT really would only be effective with a subset of sex offenders.
Yes.
Particularly those paraphilic offenders whose sex offending is really about their sexual drive.
Right, right, right.
And we recognize that for a lot of sex offenses, it's not about just fulfilling your sexual getting sexual gratification.
Yeah,
there are lots of reasons to believe that, you know, sexual assault may be more about power and control and dominance than it is about getting sexual pleasure.
Yep.
So if the sexual assault is not about sex, then HRT would not work.
Yeah, something just dealing with a hormone, it's not going to fix it.
Yeah, and it's possible, said this several times, although unlikely, to sexually perform sex while you're on HLT. But there are lots of other ways to sexually assault people than just to use your penis. So I'm going to talk about an episode of Criminal, Phoebe Judge, I assigned to my class. And it's actually a case out of South Carolina where these guys just, you know, it was a horrific sexual assault.
Yeah.
And they, you know, essentially used like an alcohol bottle.
Oh my goodness.
So
yeah,
you know, you can sexually assault people.
Yeah.
In lots of different ways.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But the judge essentially, this was several decades ago in the 90s or maybe late 80s, but the judge gave these guys the choice between 20 years in prison and physical castration. So stay tuned in a few moments and I'll tell you how that turned out.
Okay, I was going to ask. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I mean, that's an example of a sex offense where HRT would not really have done anything. It was about it was, you know, kind of a gang rape. It was power, dominance, control. It wasn't, you know, so.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of different factors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And another criticism is that it's a temporary fix.
Sure.
It's only effective as long as the treatment lasts.
Right.
And there's some indications that stopping treatment may be associated with increased recidivism risk.
Yeah.
I remember we had a guest speaker on campus not too long ago, and she actually did some of this work in
Asia. Oh, yeah.
And she mentioned the fact that, you know, sometimes when these people go off of HLT, it's not just that your testosterone rises,
but rebounds.
It like skyrockets.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it comes
like
back with a vengeance. Oh, okay, so higher than it was before. Yeah. And it's like you're, you know, on sex overdrive or hyperdrive when you go off of this treatment. So that could be a problem.
Yeah. I mean, and there's something to be said by learning how to control that kind of stuff without.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Good, effective therapeutic interventions.
Yes.
Again, spoiler alert.
Spoiler.
there are also some ethical and legal concerns with HLT.
Yeah.
So I mentioned cruel and unusual punishment before.
Yes.
You know, forcing a medical procedure or a body altering procedure on people for punishment could be questionable under the Eighth Amendment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this would be considered corporal punishment. It's a punishment to the body. You may not be using your hand, but, you know, I can kind of see where it would slip by under that definition.
Yeah. And, you know, the Supreme Court has not directly addressed this question about, you know, whether chemical castration violates the
Eighth Amendment
or not. well, I mean, I'm just speculating here, but, you know, there's not. It seems like this is not as widespreadly used as people might think it is. You know,
yeah. It's just, I mean, like, if we can't even figure out how widespread the use is, that sort of tells me it's probably rare.
Yeah, that's what I'm. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking. That's just a guess, but
It's a guess for me also, since some states have like the financial resources to even afford their death penalty cocktail drugs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that are they going to shell out money to do this consistently?
I didn't mention this, but a lot of states say that the offender has to pay for this.
Oh, that makes sense.
But then if they can't pay for it, then the state has to pay for it. And of course, we know that most offenders who would get sentenced to this wouldn't be able to pay for it to begin with. So ultimately, the state would end up paying for it in most cases.
Yeah.
You know, but anyway, there are, you know, criteria that the court uses to determine if a punishment is cruel and unusual. Is it, you know, proportional? Is it, you know, inherently excessive or inherently cruel?
Right.
Does it comport with kind of societal standards and norms and those types of things? So, like I said, the court hasn't really ruled on this. But also, you know, when we're thinking about that, we talked about those like long-term health consequences before.
Sure.
Or, so you mentioned it's like
a
body.
In other words, like being a woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it may be cruel and unusual to treat male sex offenders
as if
like
they were women.
Yeah, a menopausal woman. So,
Yeah,
definitely Eighth Amendment violation there.
Yeah,
and then also another kind of sticky legal question is that a lot of these statutes impose kind of indeterminate periods, like you're going to be on this indefinitely until we say you're not.
Right.
And that, you know, raises some legal and ethical questions about criminal punishment.
Yes. Yes.
And like I said, the Supreme Court hasn't definitively ruled either way, but I mentioned the criminal episode where the, you know, the three guys were allowed to choose between physical castration and 20 years in prison, and they all chose physical castration.
They did?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I probably would too.
Yeah, like 20 years in prison?
20 years in prison?
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, like at this point, I'd be almost dead. But, you know, yeah, it's like a temporary torture.
It's a surgery.
Suffering. It's a surgery.
Yeah, like even in the 80s, they're not going to
have any testicles.
Yeah, you're going to put people to sleep for that. So it's like, you know. So I think I would too. 20 years in prison, like I don't want to.
Definitely.
You know,
yeah.
Especially being, you know, mid-40s, middle age, 20 years in prison. Like
it's a long time. It's basically the rest of your life.
I'll be coming out of there in a walker if I make it out at all, for sure. But anyway, the South Carolina Supreme Court said that was unconstitutional, so it overturned those services.
Had they already completed the
no.
surgery? Okay.
No.
So they were not able to get their physical castration.
Right. No,
okay.
they were not. Yeah. Huh. So that was just a state Supreme Court, not the U.S. Supreme Court, but at least South Carolina in that case ruled that castration, physical castration was cruel and unusual.
Okay. Well, there's that.
Yeah. And finally, similar to other sex offender legislations and restrictions, mm-hmm. chemical castration laws often represent knee-jerk emotional policymaking.
Yes.
And, you know, to be clear, sexual victimization of children is horrifying, and we absolutely should be trying to stop
it. Yes, and we're not minimizing
it
at all
for
this conversation.
But, of course, it's a horrifying thing, and it's understandable that kind of our gut instinct is, like, retributive and harsh and punitive.
Yes.
And we often make these decisions to, you know, horrific cases. Like, a lot of these laws are kind of named after specific victims in horrific cases.
Right.
That we oftentimes pass these laws based on those emotions rather than on scientific evidence and best principles.
Right. Yeah.
And HLT may not be as susceptible to this criticism, but most sex offender laws and restrictions are about preventing stranger abduction. So if you think about things like registries and notification, and residency restrictions and GPS monitoring, that's all about trying to keep the creepy stranger away from kids.
Right.
We've covered this before.
Yes.
We know that particularly with children, they're vastly more at risk from family members, neighbors, and people that know them.
Yes.
So most of the things that we do to try to stop the sexual victimization of kids is targeted at things that aren't
a minuscule portion. Likely to happen.
Yeah, they certainly happen, and it's certainly horrific when it happens, but the most danger that kids are in from sexual victimization is from
people they know.
People they know, right. And, you know, again, HLT may not be quite as susceptible to that.
Right.
But it's you know, there's still some elements of that.
Okay. So that being said, what do we do? Where do we go from here?
Well, it seems like we, you know, we said we might already be moving away from this. We don't really know for sure how often it's truly used.
Yeah.
And particularly the trend of bills, like, being repealed and not failing to pass indicates that maybe this is kind of falling out of popularity or fad.
Yes.
And one thing that's important is that, you know, regardless of, you know, the therapies and things like that, the literature asserts that, you know, pairing HLT with mental health counseling is always recommended.
Yes.
And so some people have questioned whether, you know, chemical castration is even necessary over and above that counseling.
Right.
So we've mentioned CBT, cognitive behavioral treatment therapy before.
Definitely.
There's lots of great applications of CBT. I about said CBD.
That too.
Yeah, lots of great evidence and applications of CBD.
CBD too.
But CBT.
Yes.
Cognitive behavioral therapy, it's designed to help participants recognize the link between cognitions and actions, how our thinking and thinking patterns affect our behaviors, and provide ways to modify our behavior and thinking patterns. But it's been shown to be effective with sex offenders.
Yes.
So there's, you know, we hear this myth that, like, sex offenders can't be rehabilitated and those
types
of things.
Or they can't control the, like, desire to offend.
Yeah. There's lots of research on CBT that's, you know, pretty strongly consistent that this is effective treatment.
Yeah, for lots of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in light of the limited evidence of use and effectiveness of HLT with sex offenders and the ethical and legal concerns, CBT seems like a more effective conventional route for sex offender treatment.
Yeah.
Got anything else?
I do not.
Well, that's chemical castration, then, HLT, everybody, which means that it is now our minute to spin it, where we give our takeaway from today's episode. So, Tommy, what's your spin in just a minute?
Well, I guess my only spin here is that chemical castration is not all it's chopped up to be.
good. I thought you were going to say cracked and like, but
no,
chopped. Yeah, chopped.
It's not all it's chopped up to be.
Not all it's snipped up to be.
Ben, what's your spin?
Take the last train to Clarksville and I'll meet you at the station. You did a sex offense and you got chemical castration, testosterone. Low, 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 low. Oh, no, no, no.
That's a good rhyme.
Oh,
that's
thanks.
Very good.
Thank you.
You're a poet.
It's been a few episodes since I've done a song, so I just had that one on my heart today.
I like that one.
So chemical castration may not be effective as we might think, and it might be used even less than we know.
Yes.
Who knows? But the better bet might be to go with tried and true therapeutic methods like CBT for sex offenders.
We are a community-driven podcast sponsored by the Gandhi Center and produced by JMU Libraries. Check out our website linked in show notes to see how you can support our educational programming.